Blog Talk Radio.
Rush into Old Navy starting tomorrow. The entire store's on sale, up to 50% off. Want to save even more? Redeem your super cash now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Better hurry, though. Sunday's the last day. Excludes clearance, gift cards, register lane items, jewelry, today and two-day only deals.
Blog Talk Radio.
Nazim is the author of Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self, a how-to manual for all those wanting permanent change in their lives. It is also a guide to virtually go back in time and eliminate all negative feelings associated with your past experiences that have caused any level of difficulty in your present life. Nazim has helped clients move from apathy to productivity, from codependency to loving themselves without attachment, from drug-addicted lifestyles to clean and sober positive examples, demonstrating what can be accomplished when one connects and stays connected to that which gives life. I am Dorothy Rashid, the co-host. Without any further ado, I bring to you Nazim Rashid.
Yay, all right. Thank you, my wonderful Dorothy, for that great introduction again. Yes, it is another day in paradise. Another day in paradise. Wonderful, fantastic. We're here in the Phoenix, Arizona area in the good old USA. And I want to give a shout out to our new out-of-the-country fan. We have feedback from Australia. Okay, so we have Australia, South Africa, Malaysia, Thailand, Germany, Singapore. Okay, very good. Welcome all into our Paradise One studio, where every day is a holiday and the party never stops. Yay!
Yay!
All right then. Okay, so welcome again to our Reconnected show, which is based on the chapters in my book. My studio audience is getting bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. All right, we always start with the opening prayer. Like I mentioned before on this program, whatever name or reference fits your belief system will do just fine when I am mentioning God. Just know that we did not create ourselves, and in knowing this reality, we can give attention and honor the source of our creation for guidance and direction. I'm using God as an universal theme and is not relegated to any particular religion or belief system. With the name of God, we thank you for the breath we are breathing and the life we are living. Thank you for the clouds of abundance you have assigned to us, raining down your blessings and grace. Thank you for sending us people, places, and events that match the radiant, positive, optimistic energy you have instilled in us to emulate. Thank you for the compassionate relationships that continuously bring out the best, reflecting the highest good you have placed within. Amen. All right, for show notes, we have Dorothy. Take it away.
We all have experienced disappointments in our past, and some of us have not reconciled those issues. In order for us to travel wonderfully on our healthy path of life, we have to release all of this unnecessary baggage that is preventing us from going full speed ahead. This is what Nazim's book, Reconnected, and this program is designed to do. Let us hear from you as we learn together how discovering the needs of our child self can make a substantial difference in our lives. The long-awaited book, Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self, is available now at www.cloudsofabundance.com, amazon.com, Healthy Habits Food Stores in Phoenix, Arizona, Jazzy Yogurt Shop in Scottsdale, Arizona, and BarnesandNobles.com. The chapters in the book and the themes of this Reconnected show are forgiveness, validation, self-esteem, visualization, self-image, communication and listening skills, optimism, gratitude, faith, spirituality, codependency and addiction, recovery issues, identifying and managing emotions. You can connect with Nazim using his email address in our book club at gmail.com. That's N as in Nazim, R as in Rashid, book club at gmail.com. Or the website, www.cloudsofabundance.com. You'll find information such as life coaching, book signing dates, webinars, and workshops. All live coaching is done through your phone, so you can have sessions with Nazim wherever you may be in the world. Live coaching is about removing the obstacles and encouraging you to go beyond your perceived barriers to the accomplishment of your dreams and aspirations. Live coaching is about results now and creating the future that you want versus counseling that spends a lot of time in healing the past. Healing the past is also important and something Nazim does with his book and book-related events. It's time to be reconnected and time for the new you. Nazim?
All right. Yes, it is. Time for the new you. And we all know if we take a little bit of time to ponder on that idea, you'll know what I'm talking about. You will resonate with this message. It's time for the new you. Mm-hmm. A lot of us, we kind of keep that new you locked up inside. We don't want it to come out sometimes for some reason or other, maybe ego, who knows what. But that authentic you inside needs to come out. That way you will see your greatness manifest. Absolutely. The Reconnected Show, that's where you're tuned in today. This is a personal growth program. Yes, it is. Designed with your inner peace in mind. The discussions will be based on the chapters in my book, Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self. This book contains a methodology for filling the many emotional voids experienced in childhood. You will learn to become a time traveler. Yes, yes, yes. And right now we have movies coming out about time traveling, Cloud Atlas, and you got the, you know, a lot of things coming out. You got Fringe on TV. So time traveling is not such a foreign concept anymore. It's wonderful, you know? And my book is right in line with that. Mm-hmm. Traveling back in time. Sounds fun, huh? Yep. To the place and time of your upbringing, becoming a senior advisor, next door friend of the family, and mentor to your child self. You will create the fictional character, the mentor, you, acting as the mentor or godparent to your child self. You will have sessions with your child self as you will address those negative events that you still carry with you and change the outcome to one of your desire. This way, you will create real internal change in your life and be free of the negative effects of unresolved past issues. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, sounds good, huh? Sounds delicious. Mm. It is also for parents who want new information for raising the best emotionally balanced children possible. Mm-hmm. I have a three-part parenting video on YouTube based on my book. Just go to YouTube.com and put in a search, Reconnected, the Parents Manual. The Parents Manual is a three-part video there. Mm-hmm. Free for you. Reconnected is also for mentors who can appreciate additional tools for their mentees and teachers who would cherish more methods for shaping, motivating, and inspiring our students, reflecting the greatness that they already possess within. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Couples, oh yes, wanting a better relationship can also benefit from the personal growth tools being offered, such as communication and listening skills. We need that today. Yes, marriages are failing. So this book can help have long-lasting, healthy, joyous, happy relationships, connecting in the best possible way. Those in recovery will benefit from Reconnected, as I have over 100 pages dedicated to addictions, codependency, and recovery in my 12 Principles of Recovery chapter and Codependency chapter. This recovery program is not just for those afflicted with drug addictions. It is also beneficial to those suffering from anger, abuse, compulsive disorders, overeating, gambling, sexual and controlling issues. Reconnected is also for any individual who wants to consciously connect to their higher self, to spirit, source energy, to God. You see, it's really a multi-purpose manual, six manuals in one. Mm-hmm. A parent's manual, teacher's manual, recovery manual, mentor's manual, relationship manual, a manual for the transformation of your negative experiences to positive memories, loving yourself at deep, deep levels, and creating the life you have always desired. Sounds wonderful. Mm-mm-mm. Yes, 412 pages, 14 chapters. Yes, I call it the Human Manual. Like Dorothy was saying earlier, you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and my site, cloudsofabundance.com. Absolutely. You can contact me anytime in our book club at gmail.com. Absolutely. And if you have any problems whatsoever, you can always email me for assistance. I'll walk you through the process. I want you to make sure you have this in your hand. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. We didn't come here with a manual. We just kind of bounced our way through life. Now we have some kind of reference here in which we can always go back to make sure we're on the right path toward the best human being you can be. Okay, we're going to shift to our happy news segment, which we always do. So at our international and national news desk, we have Dorothy again. Take it away.
Today's title is Ditch That Crossword Puzzle and Take a Walk If You Want to Beat Dementia. People in their 70s who walk several times a week had less brain shrinkage. Research implies it is never too late to benefit from exercise. The article is written by Jenny Hope. Forget the crossword puzzle. Going for a walk may be better insurance against developing dementia, says researchers. A study has found physical exercise, rather than mind stretching activity, offers the best protection against excessive shrinking of the brain in later life. Research suggests that brain shrinkage may lead to problems with memory and thinking. Key symptoms of dementia. Exercising in old age may protect the brain. Some 820,000 people in Britain have dementia, with most suffering from Alzheimer's disease. Previous studies have found regular exercise can cut the risk of developing dementia by a third. While others suggest keeping mentally active with crosswords, playing cards, and computer work. Study author Alan Gow from the University of Edinburgh says, the research provided objective evidence that exercise is critical for brain health. He added, people in their 70s who participated in more physical exercise, including walking several times a week, had less brain shrinkage and other signs of aging in the brain than those who were less physically active. On the other hand, our study showed no real benefit to participating in mentally and socially stimulating activities on brain size, as seen on MRI scans over the 3-year time frame. Altogether, 638 Scottish people born in 1936 who had been involved in a long-term study of aging took part in the research. They were asked to fill in questionnaires aged 70 and were given MRI scans at age 73. They gave details about their exercise habits, ranging from moving only in connection with household chores to keeping fit with heavy exercise or playing competitive sports several times a week. They also recorded any social and mentally stimulating activities they did. The studies published in the journal Neurology found that after 3 years, those doing more exercise had less brain shrinkage than those who exercised minimally. They also had larger volumes of gray matter in the brain, showing that fewer brain cells had died. Professor James Goodwin, head of research at Age UK, which supported the study, said, this research reemphasizes that it really is never too late to benefit from exercise. So whether it's a brisk walk to the shop, gardening, or competing in a fun run, it is crucial that those of us who can get active as we grow older. Dr. Simon Ridley, head of research at Alzheimer's Research UK, said, while we can't say that exercise is the causal factor in this study, is the causal factor in this study, we do know that exercise in middle age can lower the risk of dementia later in life. Interesting. Nazim?
Yeah, it's very interesting, very interesting. So it goes to show you there that it's important to stay active, and I really applaud those seniors that I've read about and seen and talked to who are like over the age of 80 who are doing exactly that, swing dancing, hiking, mountain climbing, traveling, fishing, sports, very active. As one common thread I've seen in those individuals, and it's their smile. They all have a big smile. And you know, smiling generates that positive energy that goes throughout the whole body, you know, physically, spiritually, emotionally. And so when you see that sense of joy in them, that's the common denominator. So to me, that's the best place to start. You know, smile. And it's very important. And when you do that, you start attracting more reasons to smile and people who are happy themselves. It's wonderful. I've been around them, and it's an absolute fantastic joy to be around them like that, who just have a good quest and thirst for life. Fantastic. All right, then. Yes. Okay. Take a breath. Today's theme, the two parenting styles of isolation and insulation. With Dr. Douglas Brown, I believe it's our part 3, I believe, today. The last time Dr. Brown was on the Reconnected show, he continued his series on the two parenting styles of isolation and insulation. He was saying that the child naturally feels like they are safe and they can express themselves without feeling like they are wrong. You know, and a child, when a child feels like they're wrong as a person, you know, not good. This happens with an insulation parenting style. They should feel like they won't be assaulted in the home from anybody, whether it be from another sibling, the parents, or those coming into the home. The healthy parent insulates them from these negative elements. Some parents think that when they pamper the child, that it is their way of loving that child. Pampering comes in the form of giving more to the child when they haven't earned more, keeping them extra clean without allowing them to get dirty. Pampering is a form of isolation. These children have their way with their parents. They are also overprotected. Also, in this parenting style comes racism and classism. Think about that. Yeah, like indoctrination, you know. The opposite example is the neglected child. These children are fearful and feel like they're not accepted. Depression and feeling alone belong to them. And when you look at this idea of them pampered ones having a way with their children, I've seen too many times on some of these talk shows where parents are complaining that their 12 or 13-year-old locked them out the house. Yep, well, that's what's happening. You know, it's hard to believe, but when you look in their faces and the mother says, well, you know, Maury helped me out. You know, she locked me out. What can I do? And the child is sitting there with her arms folded saying, yeah, that's right. She acts up, I'll do it again. We have a real problem here. Okay, well, so today we will continue with Dr. Brown on this series going through the developmental stages, really starting at the age of 5 with the two parenting styles of isolation and insulation. Dr. Brown, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Nazim. How are you?
Good morning. Fantastic.
Great. Good to hear your voice.
Oh,
good
yeah.
To
good
to be on the program, too.
Yes, I'm glad you're here. And it seems like there's a little challenges are coming away sometimes, but that's okay. You know, we always get through them some kind of way.
Don't give up hope.
We always get through them, you know, so it's all good. You know, it always makes us stronger, more determined to make it happen. Yeah, so I want to ask you, Dr. Brown. Now, I went through the whole introduction here, and one thing I found is that we were being very general last time, and so I want to be real specific looking at these different developmental ages, because, like, parents who are listening, they're looking at their little 5-year-old, you know, just getting into school, and so there's concerned, sometimes overly concerned about the well-being of this child, especially if it came from an isolated situation. And sometimes parents might hang around school or peep in the window looking at the kid in the classroom or just circle or block several times around the school or if they go home, they're nervous. So let's talk about what happens, pro and con, at that age, looking at the two various parenting styles that we can.
All right, that sounds great. In fact, it reminds me of a case that I reviewed this week of a child about 5 years old who was starting K.
Oh.
Starting K. The problem is that when the mother takes the child to school, takes this girl to school, she acts out so bad until the principal has to call mom to school.
Uh-oh.
What occurs is that the mother ends up taking the child back home because they can't get the child to stop crying and screaming when mother leaves the child at the school. Now, actually, the child is controlling the parent in this case. We've got a situation here where the child has been isolated from healthy interaction with other children her age. She has been primarily, you know, kept within the confines of the home, spent a great deal of time with family members, but hasn't had an opportunity to explore, at least explore
mm-hmm.
beyond the house, you know, and the home. So when that critical moment comes, when she has to prepare to leave mom's arms or the bedroom or the kitchen, to use a colloquial phrase, she freaks out. I don't mean
Uh-oh.
That in a negative way. She freaks out. And there's actually a clinical name for that. It's called separation anxiety.
Okay.
Called separation anxiety disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a disorder or a description of a situation when children cannot tolerate separation from their parents or their caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
This is, in most cases, this is the consequence of isolation. Clearly not insulation, but isolation from opportunities to interact with others outside of the home, to be with others other than the primary parents or guardians. So this is an ongoing, what I mean is that this is something you see quite often, you know, because parents sometimes, in their good intentions, they want to obviously protect the children, their children. I want to make sure that my child is safe. And they innocently or inadvertently keep the child inside. You see what I'm saying? You follow me here?
Yes, 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 uh-huh.
And this has consequences either, excuse me, I apologize, this has consequences for later in life.
Mm.
Because children, young children that cannot make that transition, they can't make the transition from the backyard to the schoolroom. What occurs in some cases is that they also encounter ridicule or alienation from their same age peers. Because, you know, children are very social.
Yes.
They like to play with one another. They like to interact with one another. And, you know, in most cases, when you have a group of children together, the child that doesn't want to play, the child that doesn't know how to play, is ostracized by the rest of the children.
Okay.
If you've ever watched youngsters on a playground or in a park,
mm-hmm.
in an area where there are designated toys or there's a swing set or what have you, a child that doesn't really know how to interact or socialize, that child may approach, for example, I'm using this as an example to draw from.
Sure.
That child will approach the playground. That child will approach the swing, or for that matter, the baseball field. But that child never approaches it with a sense of safety, a sense of fun. I'm looking forward to being involved. There's always a kind of shyness associated
mm-hmm.
with that approach. Individuals who are brought up in those kinds of situations, they tend to prefer separation. That goes back to the separation anxiety disorder. In childhood. Now, that can morph into social detachment in adulthood. I prefer to be alone. You know, I'm better off by myself. You know, really, I do better by myself. I really don't like to be around a lot of people. Now, I'm not saying these statements are indicative of illness. I'm saying an individual who has a pattern, you see, of making these statements, of preferring to be separated from others.
Mm-hmm.
In one way or another, has experienced isolation. Now, before I began to speak, before you gave me the authorization to speak, before I got that authorization, you had introduced the relationship between a parent, isolative or insulated, in relationship to their interactions with a five-year-old. I simply would like to extend that and broaden that a little, and let's say from 5 to 8.
Good.
Let's talk about ranges here.
Good.
Age ranges in relation to development.
Yes.
A child from 5 to 8, children are highly social. Children look for feedback that they are competent. They're competent. Children like to build things. They like to draw things. When they're together, they like to compete with one another. You know, my picture is better than yours. Or look at mine. So that child who is isolated, okay, insulation, okay, that child never has opportunities to experience these kinds of interactions. That child doesn't really have opportunities to say, so to speak, my picture is as good as yours. Oh, that's nice. They never develop a comfort level when they're around others.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're going to fast forward through a few developmental stages. And the reason being is because I want to talk about the consequences, you see, of parental styles that are primarily isolation and parental styles that are functional. Now, if that parental style is primarily based on isolation, then we've got an adult that becomes codependent. We have an adult that when that adult attempts to move forward, you know, in the adult world, to assume common responsibilities, you know.
Yes.
They may be, you know, having a family of their own, being able to secure a job and hold the job down.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that this individual, in some cases, will secure a job, right?
Okay.
The person may or may not be able to retain the job. Sometimes people that have experienced isolation in their early years, they approach new situations not with anticipation, not looking forward to what the new situation brings, but they approach the new situation with suspicion, concern.
Mm.
You know, I wonder if, for example, if you've got an individual who's got a new job, right?
Okay.
They go on the job, and rather than see it as an opening, you know, this can be a good opportunity, very positive, they walk in on their first day, and they typically are concerned about, I wonder if people are going to accept me.
Okay.
I wonder if I'm doing enough. There's always this prevailing notion of, I wonder if I'm doing enough. Can I make it? And a large part of this comes from a combination of factors, you know, the poor parenting and the isolation. You see, the misinterpretation. I'd like to actually pause for a moment and invite you to help me out here, the audience, and you to help me out here. Does this make sense when I make this statement? Some people who are very angry and very hostile, have not had much contact with other people. Does that sound sensible to you?
No.
I didn't think it did, and I'm glad you were honest. I'm glad you're being honest, because one of the consequences of isolation is anger and resentment. A child, a teenager that has been isolated from social interaction and social contact, sometimes that child can develop deep resentments and anger, not only because they feel they haven't had enough experience, I haven't been out here in the world, but sometimes people develop anger and resentment towards individuals who are successful.
Okay, I can see that.
That's where I'm coming from with that.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. Yeah.
So, one of the ways, you know, how do I cope? How would I cope with this negative, this uncomfortable feeling being around others? Or what can I do to resolve these feelings? In many cases, what I'm going to do is I'm going to isolate further.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it is, what I fear, I'm afraid of any attack or blame from others. I'm afraid of imagined repudiation or rejection. I'm afraid that I'm not good enough, that I'm going to be evaluated in a negative light. I basically feel like I don't know, I can't do it. I don't know what it takes sometimes. I'm not trying to be all over the place. I'm giving the audience and you some scenarios of how a person copes as they grow older with having that childhood experience of isolation.
Now, right there, Dr. Brown, hold tight. I have a question. Matter of fact, we have a caller online that has a burning question, probably in the same area for so we can all get a little more clarity, okay?
Fine.
I believe it's New Jersey. 973, you're on the air.
Greetings. Yes, thank you for taking my question, brothers and sister there.
Mm-hmm.
I want to throw a little hot sauce on the show and maybe spice it up a little bit by giving an alternate view, if I will, you know, not out of disrespect, but in my case, my daughter, who's 11.
Okay.
We homeschooled her for up until kindergarten, and then she just couldn't wait. She wanted to go to school so bad. So we finally gave in, and we enrolled her in first grade. And she flourished. I mean, she was like the most popular girl in her class. And even the upperclassmen, she was a little more mature than the other ones because being around us more than, you know, being spending more time around adults, she was more mature than the other kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so even the upperclassmen, like the fourth graders and third graders, they adored her, you know, they treated her like a little sister. And she was reading on a high level. So I think there's some cases where being isolated can also lead to more development, actually, especially when you consider that the majority of some of our kids in the cities are not on par with reading level and tend to be, you know, a negative influence on a child. Can you please, like, take that back to me, brothers? Thank you.
Dr. Brown.
Yes, thank you. That's excellent. Those are excellent points that the caller is making. And I'd like to share with the caller and you, Nazim, that's exactly how I, in the early stages with my own two daughters, I homeschool my two daughters.
Okay.
And in fact, homeschooling is not isolation. Because I've got to create the semblance of the classroom at home.
Wow.
Right, brother?
Right on.
You see, what I'm actually doing is I'm taking the school and I'm bringing it home. And you sound like a great father.
Sounds great.
Because
you too, brother.
What you were doing is you were preparing your daughter for that school setting. You know, so the transition would not be as strange and awkward for her. And because of your good, you know, parenting as a father, and because of that homeschooling, when she made that transition, it was not as strange for her as it was for her peers. She had a great deal of joy about it. She anticipated it and looked forward to it. That was exactly the case with my own daughters. In fact, that is not isolation.
The more insulation, huh?
It's a kind of insulation. If you put it this way, the brother who called was insulating his daughter from the negative effect of going from home to school.
Okay.
He was insulating her.
Mm-hmm.
He was preparing her.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I got it right, you know. That's not insulation.
Sound right to me.
Yeah. By the way, brother, what's your name? Are you calling from the New Jersey area?
Yeah, I'm in the Hurricane Sandy, New Jersey here. I'm in
oh, wow.
the North area.
Okay. And your name, brother, what's your name?
Brother P.
Brother P. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, matter of fact, didn't you call once before?
It's possible, but I haven't been on Blog Talk for at least a year, I think. It's possible. Highly possible.
Okay. it rings a bell to me.
I have another question I want to ask, if I may.
Sure, go ahead.
This is another aspect of this isolation phenomenon, and I think that black people have a tendency to isolate our children away from the truth in terms of the racism of this society, and I think that's detrimental to them. If you don't tell them what exactly, you know, what the dynamic is, and they grow up thinking it's a tra-la land, and then when they hit that brick wall of reality, they have a lot of confusion and resentment, and could be a very negative experience. So I think, like, a lot of people, they tell me, oh, I don't like Roots. It makes me mad. I don't let my kids watch that.
Right.
And I think that's exactly what our kids need. They need to be exposed to the truth
to
figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Another excellent question. Very excellent. Children, fundamentally, small children, you ever watch them in a disaster, for example? I'm sure Sandy, you know, Sandy on the East Coast. You ever watch that when children are in an area where there is a natural disaster, like the earthquakes in Japan several years ago, children always play. You notice that? They are clearing away the wreckage. You get a rope or something, and the children will be out there playing rope. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The reason being is that they're not at a cognitive stage. Their brains have not yet developed where they can process fully the nature of what has occurred around them. Now, they recognize that things aren't business as usual, the adults and the damage, but they have a natural kind of protection and insulation from certain kinds of trauma, you see, that accompany disasters and misfortunes. With that said, I want you to toy with this. I want you to think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine taking your four or five-year-old child to a monster movie, to a horror movie, right?
Mm.
Now, if you do that repeatedly, soon enough, that boy or girl is going to start having nightmares and dreams. And the reason being, in part, is because their child is, although the child is watching the pictures and hearing the sounds, the child does not fully know how to process that in terms of, this is a movie.
Right.
This isn't the real world. Now, getting back to what the brother was saying, the question that he's asking, I don't think that it is psychologically healthy to share these kinds of experiences with young children. It's better to insulate them. It's better to insulate them until they reach a sufficient age where they can begin to understand this and put it in context, or else it's in a very remote way, it's like a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
mm-hmm.
a scary movie or a monster movie that you may be telling me about, you want to prepare me about, in case the monster movie or a time have to do with social experience of adults, you know, the collective experience of a group of people. And if I watch that movie too many times, if I'm looking at that too much, you know what it can lead to in some respects? It can lead to self-doubt. It can lead to a situation where I tend to question myself. Now, I understand what the caller is saying. You know, very, very brilliant, excellent parent. I understand this. You have to teach your children that it's important to know about the past, you know, their adults, what they've gone through. It's very important to teach African-American children to be proud of themselves and high self-esteem and not to accept a lot of the negativity around them. Yet, we must understand that young children don't need that now. They don't need it now.
Hey, can I adjust the brother?
Yes.
Go ahead, brother.
Okay. I understand exactly what you're saying, but I think something that we usually miss is that we take for granted children's intelligence. And you see, in the absence of an explanation of how black people got into this position, that would lead to low self-esteem. Because if I see that my people are subjugated and have a second-class status and are not employed at the rate we should and are not self-employed at the rate we should and discriminated against and abused, then I'm going to internalize it and say, well, there's something wrong with my people. Unless I know how my people got from the greatness to the lesser state, that sends a message to the children that we're inferior, intrinsically.
Okay, now, you know, you just said how my people got from the greater to the lesser state, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, what you're doing is you're starting off with the positive. You're saying that African Americans are a great people, that we come from great civilizations. And over the course of time and racism and all of these factors together, this is why that greatness or why that has faded so. You're not telling the child to feel bad. What you're doing is you're saying feel good about yourself because we are great people or we have a lot to be proud of. I want to give you a real-life example. I want to give you a personal example of what I experienced growing up. In the 50s and 60s, during the time of segregation, I recall that my parents, along with my brothers and sisters, we took a train trip down south. They're from Alabama. We were on the train. Now, here I am about 5 or 6 years old, right? And we're on the train, and the train comes up to a station. And I see people getting off the train. They're getting off the train. So my mother is sitting next to me, and I turn around to my mother, and I say, Mama, why is it that we're not getting off the train? She looks down at me, and she says, we brought our own lunch. I was satisfied, right? We brought our lunch. We were eating our lunch. That's why we didn't get off the train. Years later, now I'm telling you a true story. Years later, when I grew much older and more mature, the memory of that situation came back to my mind. I remembered that situation. When I remembered the situation, it was in the context of all that I had learned about black history, you know, our struggle in the United States, all that has occurred. And I thought about that situation, and let me tell you what came to mind. I said to myself, I wonder how I would feel if my mother had said to me, we can't get off the train. We are not allowed to get off the train.
Okay.
Or to use the vernacular at that time, colored people can't get off the train. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Follow me?
I'm with you.
If she had responded to me with a seed like that, a weed.
Right.
Is much better. If she had responded to me with a weed like that, I would say theoretically probably would have a negative effect upon my identity, no matter how subtle. No matter how subtle, I may have wondered why at an age where I shouldn't be dealing with that kind of issue.
Right.
In fact, her response satisfied me. I felt, you know, pleased. My parents they were empowered. And I thought about, had my mother responded to me with the statement, quote unquote, black people or colored people can get off the train or we can't eat lunch there. And I get those kinds of messages inadvertently from different places. That would have quite a negative effect. So, do you follow what I'm saying with this real-life example?
Oh, yeah, I understand. But I can see it from another point of view as well. what I see is I agree with, you know, I you know, what you say is totally valid. However, many times I think our parents, in shielding us from this type of experience, are actually shielding the white establishment from it. Because, in my opinion, this is just me as a black nationalist, even black children have to have a healthy distrust of the white establishment. And the younger you experience that, the better, in my opinion. Because, see, the brainwash starts at a very, very young age. As young as 2 years old, or even maybe one, we start learning that whites are more beautiful, they're the standard of beauty, they're the smart ones, they're the ones you see in the movies. And you have to counter that at a very, very young age, or you will lose your child to this brainwashed system. And see, your mother may have shielded you at that young age, but later on you experience that. And when you experience it as an older kid, it's shocking to you, because all this time you thought the Brady Bunch was the greatest thing in the world and that all whites were so great and beneficent until you really met them in real life. And it's traumatizing at, you know, at any age.
Well, you know, I would surmise, I would say that not only for African, not only for our people that have been, you know, victims of discrimination, racism, and the way the media has been employed, you know, to promote all this negative stuff. That's true in any society. That's true in any situation where you have this kind of relationship between two groups of people. There was a guy by the name of Frantz Fanon. He was an Algerian psychiatrist, and he wrote a book about the psychology of colonialization in Algeria when the French colonized Algeria.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that Dr. Fanon pointed out in that book is that the French were not capable, they were not fully capable of brainwashing the Algerians, because the Algerian people collectively and individually brought their children up in a manner where their children felt safe. In other words, it was insulation. And when they approached the ages where they could, in fact, understand this material, the situation, it was presented to them in a way where the Algerian people were empowered. Okay, what I'm doing here, what I'm attempting to say here is that I'm a psychologist. I'm also been a college professor. I've also been a chairman of Black Studies Department. You see, may I ask you something, sir? This may be an imposing question. I think I already know the answer intuitively. Can I ask you something, brother? You all with me? Are you with me, Nazim?
Yeah, I'm here, but Brother P, are you there?
Oh, hi. How you doing, brother? I'm sorry.
I think I already know intuitively the answer because of what you said. Do you teach your children to believe in Santa Claus?
Who, me, sir?
I think I know the answer.
No, bro.
You don't do that, do you?
No.
Okay, great. And I know that. I know that, right? I figured that was the case, right? But you know what? You know, think about it. Parents who teach their children to believe in a mythical figure called Santa Claus, right? They are giving this fantasy mythical figure all the power to make their children happy at a certain time of year. They're saying that this mythical figure has powers that they don't have.
Right.
Now, when that child matures and grows older, maybe it's only a couple of years, and that child finds out Santa Claus doesn't exist, I think that it may not be exactly traumatic, but it certainly is disappointing.
Right.
It's a very big disappointment. My point here is that it is the responsibility of parents to insulate their children from experiences, direct experiences, and accounts of experiences that their parents have endured that can be harmful for their children. it's there's plenty of time to teach black children, you know, the black experience in our country. There's plenty of time to teach them about the methods used to make black people in America feel inferior. But certainly okay. don't do that at a premature age.
I want to address that again. I just disagree that you have to wait until a certain age because, see, when you wait to a later age, the person is already indoctrinated, and then it's hard for them to even imagine to see what you're saying. You know, like they want to stay in that denial. And let me tell you, I saw a program on TV. The Jewish people, to their credit, they will teach their babies about the Holocaust. I saw them on TV. They had an assembly. And the little 3-4-year-olds were talking about the Holocaust. But see, that's where black people go wrong. We want to insulate and protect our children from the truth. We don't want to tell our children who the boogeyman is. In nature, every animal tells their young, watch out for this plant, watch out for that predator. But not us. We want to protect our kids and insulate them.
Can I add another I? May I add another I?
Go ahead.
Okay, now you know we're talking about insulation and isolation, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's another I word that we have to be very careful about. It's indoctrination. The other I word is indoctrination. Okay? Adolf Hitler, before World War II, Adolf Hitler, in order for him to implement the Nazi regime, he had to take an entire generation of German children with the cooperation of their parents, and indoctrinate these children and bring these children up so that, I'm being graphic here, I don't mean literally, so that particularly the men would be killers. He had to bring them up and indoctrinate them in a way so that they would have no regard for others outside of themselves. So what I'm saying, brother, we have to be careful to know the difference between indoctrination and insulation. Indoctrination is just as harmful as isolation. Because indoctrination often has a lot of misinformation, things that are misinformation, things that are not wholly accurate, they're not wholly true. I totally identify. I know what you're saying in terms of the background where you're coming from and the protection of black children. But one thing that we have to be always responsible for, and that is the facts. That is the truth. Now, in terms of the African-American experience, I'd like to for us to ponder on this. The enslavement of African-Americans, the enslavement of Africans to the Americas could not have occurred without the cooperation of other Africans.
Right.
Other Africans participated in the slave trade. You see, got us over here. So we have to be careful that we don't paint pictures that are not realistic, that are not, you know, fully factual. You see, for example, I'll share this with you, and this is, I don't mean this in a, you know, negative way. I respect you, brother. That, for example, race, the concept of races, do you know that human races do not exist? Do you know that the concept of race is a false concept? That the concept of race means species in biology. It's like you have different species of animals.
There's only, brother, you're going on a tangent here. Well, let's not get to the definition of race and racism.
See, the reason why I'm
we don't
doing
have to
this,
get into the definition of what racism is.
Let me tell you why. Because Jump Street from the get-go, if someone, not you, if somebody comes to me with racism, I correct them immediately. I say, you know, it's not about racism, it's about oppression and mistreatment. You see, because That can be a rope or a knot that I can get into where it becomes potentially unhealthy. It becomes us and them. That means that everybody who has a complexion that we call Caucasian is white. Everybody who looks like that all of a sudden becomes evil and wrong.
See, brother, I agree with you. I don't look at skin color. It's not about black and white. It's about ethnic solidarity. It's about culture. Ethnic culture and cohesion. All other ethnic groups competing with each other. That's the name of the game. Ethnic competition.
You know what the bottom line is, what I'm getting from you? I'm going to tell you what I'm getting from you, that we have to take more responsibility and be more conscientious in raising our children to be strong, healthy children and individuals, so that it doesn't make any difference who it is, that they have self-esteem, they have self-confidence, and they are able to enter the world and interact with other people without feeling, you know, the kinds of stuff that has been thrown historically to us.
Sounds good.
I understand you. Your strength and passion is out there.
Yes, but also, brother, as individuals acting within a organizational construct, seeing ourselves as an ethnic group for ethnic survival and ethnic progress.
Ditto.
We have too many individuals out here right now. That's the problem.
See, ditto. What else? I can't say. A people that do not help one another collectively, individuals who do not know how to share and help one another, they are not going to last long.
Amen.
That's a universal truth.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I tell you right there.
Amen.
Got a little pause on the show, you guys, brothers, and because the time is running out, and the switchboard is telling me they're going to stop pretty soon. However, we're not through with the conversation because...
this is very stimulating.
Oh, this is very good. I love it. I can add here, too, but I couldn't jump in there because I wanted to make sure that everybody else had their turn there. But next month, December, if the brother would call back for sure and we can continue the discussion for sure, we can do that. So everybody can get a nice round picture of what we're all talking about so we can be on the same page.
Okay, Nazim, can I jump in and add something? Because the brother has made a very good contribution.
All right.
I think we also should eventually deal with indoctrination. See?
Okay.
We've got insulation, isolation, and indoctrination. See, and he brought that point out. You know, there's a difference there between indoctrination and insulation.
Mm-hmm. Well, matter of fact, we'll add that on to the next program. We'll have the three pairing styles of isolation, insulation, and indoctrination. How about that?
Yes.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay, we'll do that. As a matter of fact, that'll be the title of the next program, and we'll do it like that for sure in December. And so, brother, I'll invite you to come back now. Now, all you have to do to see exactly the date is to keep visiting the blogtalkradio.com/reconnected and click on the calendar, and you'll see it eventually. It'll show up eventually there. blogtalkradio.com/reconnected.
Beautiful.
Okay, and you can keep visiting it. It'll be approximately 4 weeks from now, but it just depends on the week around there. So just kind of keep tuning in, and you'll find out when it's going to be on there, and then just put it on your calendar and make it happen. And come back on, because we got a lot more to talk about. It's very, very important. You know, I grew up in South South Chicago, Chocolate City, and my was completely different. I thought black folks were everything. I mean, I had no issues with racism because to me, I saw no race but blacks, black folks, you know. And when I saw white folks, I thought they were mannequins. So I had no issue with any kind of superiority because I thought it was none superior more so than black people. So I didn't have that issue.
Chicago was a strong town, brother.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't have the issue at all. I didn't have to have anybody talk to me. I was surrounded. When you're surrounded by a certain cultural norm, then no, I can tell you anything outside of that because you're indoctrinated, if I can use that term, but in an ethnocentric way, you know. So I have no issues with that. I can go any place in the world. Believe me, solid black is that, you know. no issues. But anyway, tell you what, I don't want to get on my point right now because I got in the show. However, please tune in next month so we can continue the conversation because everybody needs to learn this. You know, it's not just for us, it's for everybody because a lot of times the parents are doing their best that they can, that they know of, that was taught to them. And so whole idea
right,
is we need to look at how is that way affecting the child. Is it a child growing up in a healthy way or not? And it's not all because that the parent is happy, because the parent is doing something that their parents didn't do. It's all about what's healthy for the child. And too many times, parents are self-oriented, more so than child-oriented, you see. And it's important for us to be child-oriented and do the best for the child at a particular time, you know. So that's what we got to talk about, and that's why we're looking at these various parenting styles so we can really look at what we need to tweak in our own lives if we are current parents. And if you're not, look at what happened to us as children growing up and what you can fix through a process of reconciliation through a virtual process. It's a way to kind of correct things also, and we can talk about that later. But the whole idea, first you got to acknowledge what happened. You know, everything comes from acknowledgement, whereas recovery or anything else, it's all about acknowledgement first and foremost. All right? So with that in mind, we're going to stop the show, and we're going to invite you and everybody to come on next week. And let's see, who's on next week? Anyway, check the calendar. Sometimes I forget myself. But we have Dr. Brown on next week, and we'll have a good time then for sure. So, Dr. Brown, thanks for coming on, and you're definitely
thank
on next
you,
week.
And I thank the caller, too. That was really stimulating.
Thank you, brother. Many blessings. Thank you.
Brother P, make sure to check in next month for sure, okay?
Most definitely, all right, brother. Thank you.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, Kurt.
Askenosi of Askenosi Chocolate.
Our dream is to make chocolate that not only tastes good, but does good. We source our cocoa beans directly from small farmers and